Thank you. So yeah, disclaimer that this is a bit mathematical, as the first word in my title would suggest. I'm going to look at angiogenic behavior in solid tumors, which might sound a little vague because it's not an explicit angiogenesis model where specific vessels are developing and whatnot. It's more looking at the concentrations of pro-angiogenic and anti-angiogenic factors in a solid tumor and seeing what kind of behaviors we could get based on their balance. So this is my outline, brief biological background. Then I'll try and derive this model for interstitial fluid pressure and include that in an angiogenic growth factor transport model. Then I'm going to tell you about my results. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about is how we can extend this, which actually relates more to previous work that I've done, and the model's kind of devolved into a simpler system so that we can build it back up again, because we ran into some issues. So tumor angiogenesis was relatively untouched until Kathleen's talk, where she stole a bit of the thunder, but I'm not mad. Surprisingly, though, for a mathematical oncology talk, because there's a lot of work done in these very complex angiogenesis models where we have networks growing and blood flow and pressure and all these things. But the main things that I want to say biologically are that when tumor cells are exposed to hypoxia or other factors such as high acidity, they'll start releasing these angiogenic growth factors. And these angiogenic growth factors are kind of a plea for help for nearby existing blood vessels to send some sprouts towards the tumor. And I think this is actually specifically the viewpoint Kathleen didn't like, which was a blob and then blood vessels around it. But in a simplified, since we want to simplify things, this is basically the whole picture we're going to be considering. So first up, I'm going to talk about two very basic experimental observations that are kind of on a tumor scale. So the first one is, look at this dotted line in this picture here. This is tissue perfusion, so the amount of blood that's flowing over some time period in the tissue. And this x-axis here, say, is radial distance from the core of the tumor. So 0 is the core, 1 is the boundary, and then greater than 1 is we're moving into the host tissue that the tumor's embedded in. So we see this very distinct thing. This is a experiment from 1974, actually, and it's been cited 17 trillion times, and we have no blood flow near the middle for whatever this tumor is, highest blood flow at the rim, and that's basically all we want to glean from that. Ignore this solid line for now. That's a modeling result by Ramanujan. And the second thing I want to say is these angiogenic growth factor concentrations. So this is taken along a slice of a tumor, and the core is about where this arrow is pointing at right here. And all these factors are kind of stuck in the middle of the tumor. And then these concentrations decrease as we move out of the tumor. And these are pro-angiogenic factors here. I think this marker corresponds to VEGF activation. But pro-angiogenic and anti-angiogenic factors and all these different kinds would exhibit different concentration profiles depending on how they're transported and whatnot. So those are two things to keep in mind. High perfusion at the rim, and high AGF concentrations in the core. And how do we reconcile those two facts? It's not too hard. And I want to say some properties of tumor vessels in general. So they're developing hastily, and they're just trying to get as much tumor vasculature towards these hypoxic cells as fast as possible. And they're extremely inefficient. And the main point that I'm making today is they're super leaky. So tons of interstitial fluid pressure is escaping out of these leaky vessel walls, which leads to elevated interstitial fluid pressure at the core of the tumor and a lot of convective transport of factors and really any macromolecule out of the tumor. And the main trouble with this, of course, is that it leads to hindered drug delivery. Not much. When we apply chemotherapy, we have trouble getting it into the bulk of the tumor because of all of these reasons. So we have a couple clinical goals just based off these observations of tumor vessels. One of them is this idea of normalization, which will be a picture on my next slide, where essentially we want to consider, instead of having tons of pro-angiogenic growth factors tilting the scale towards some sort of tortuous vasculature, we want to normalize this balance, so realign anti and pro-angiogenic. And obviously the second part of that would be alleviating elevated interstitial fluid pressure to minimize convective transport. And here's a nice picture of showing this process of tumor normalization, how we would achieve it. So we apply these anti-angiogenic agents, and theoretically this would help set the balance to a more normal vasculature type of scenario. Unfortunately, there's a lot of issues with this this theory, one of them being even if you can normalize the vasculature, chances are it's going to revert to an abnormal state pretty quickly. And if I administer too many anti-angiogenic agents, I get excessive pruning, and now I can't deliver any chemotherapy anyways, which was my goal. So now I'm going to look at kind of the relationship between these two things that I've been talking about, which is tumor angiogenesis and the resultant interstitial fluid pressure, and showing how they're really entangled together and trying to make sense of their relationship. So this first fact is more just an interesting fact about the relationship between interstitial flow and angiogenesis. This isn't something that I've included in a model here or anything that I've done mathematically, but more so just saying the importance of convection in determining tumor angiogenesis. So there was this very interesting paper that displayed that even in the presence of VEGF, say some sort of constant pro-angiogenic factor concentration, you don't see much angiogenesis, or you see some sort of symmetric inefficient vasculature. And the only way you'll see some directed useful capillary formation is if you have these pro-angiogenic factors, VEGF, and interstitial flow. So interstitial flow is playing a crucial role in the development of blood vessels. And once again, that's a fact, not something I'm going to include in the modeling. But I'm trying to convince you that adding convection to some of these models would be useful. So mechanically, it helps. And the second thing is the molecular weights of these factors are quite high. So I have them here in kilodaltons, say 10 to 100 or even bigger. So about, say, 1,000 times bigger than a glucose molecule, suggesting that if we wanted to model the transport of some of these factors or these factors in general, chances are we're not just going to want to rely on a diffusion model, which has been done many times. Chances are, in tumors at least, that convection is not only important, but probably the primary transport mechanism for these large macromolecules. So that's my brief biological background. Angiogenesis, interstitial fluid pressure, and some sort of motivation for wanting to smush them together. So now we're going to get into things that may be disturbing or interesting to you in a mathematical modeling sense. So we start from the most basic of equations. This slide could be considered the derivation from glancing over continuum mechanics and getting it to an equation that we could reasonably solve. So we start with just a basic continuity equation for some concentration of a molecule, and we consider the time derivative plus the divergence of some flux, which is going to be diffusive and convective in nature, is equal to whatever production or degradation of these factors. So some sources and sinks make up this P term. And like I said before, instead of just including a diffusive flux, which is the typical thing to do via Fick's law, so something proportional to the gradient of that concentration, we're also going to include convective flux, which moves along some velocity V. So there's some fluid velocity that is moving this concentration along. This should probably be justified later in the model when I talk about the fact we're looking at a fixed tumor and that this diffusive and convective flux and even the production happen on a relatively fast time scale compared to tumor growth. So we're really only interested in looking right now, at least, at some sort of steady state equation. So we, I guess, set the time derivative to zero, kind of. And we make two key assumptions that help us make this equation tractable. One, constant diffusion coefficients, that could be justified or disputed. And we assume that the velocity V of this molecule is proportional to the velocity of fluid, which is U. The final simplification is the easiest production and degradation term I could ever come up with, which is constant production and then some sort of constant degradation constant or decay rate. Okay, so we have the equation on the bottom symbolizing some equation for concentrations of something. Now we're going to use a steady state equation to model angiogenic growth factors. So, like I said, we're going to consider the simplest geometry we can as well, which is a sphere made up of some homogeneous porous media that we'll consider to be the tumor. And then anywhere outside of that sphere will be considered to be some other tissue that's also homogeneous and porous, and among other assumptions, to say the least. So we have two distinct tissues involved here, and the parameters will differ between them. And we're interested in looking at the concentrations of these angiogenic growth factors in the tumor and outside the tumor. We want to break them up into two categories, so we do the usual throw ones that are predominantly anti-angiogenic into one category and throw all the other ones that are stimulatory into some pro-angiogenic factor. So we're looking at two concentrations, say F sub P and F sub A, that correspond to those two categories. Realistically, some could act as both. Some could act in one way in certain microenvironments, in other ways in other microenvironments, but we're throwing all of this wide array of molecules into two categories. And we're going to use that equation, the last equation that I wrote on the last board or on the last slide, to represent these. And the key here is that all of these parameters are going to differ inside and outside the tumor. So it's some constant rate of diffusion inside that differs from the constant rate of diffusion outside. And notationally, there's just going to be some superscripts, which are undesirable at best, to denote whether it's corresponding to tumor or host tissue. And same for the production and the decay rates, and these have all been estimated for certain factors. So we know at least the order of magnitude of these things. And the last thing I want to say is this is actually what the equation looks like that I'm going to solve by putting in the spherical Laplacian and divergence in the diffusion and convective terms. The only thing I kind of overlooked, because it's done all the time, is this fat proportionality constant between the two velocities is typically set to 1, indicating that this molecule is traveling at the same speed as the fluid. Not exactly true, but close to 1. So this is most boring slide award, is the boundary conditions for these growth factors. And they're as simple as possible as well. So we have zero flux at the core, which enforces spherical symmetry. And then we want to ensure that these concentrations are continuous. And the flux at the boundary of the tumor is also continuous. So that's these two in the middle. And then as we move away from the tumor, we need to impose a far field boundary condition, or numerically some large radial distance away, where we want these values to be approaching some steady state. So that's the angiogenic growth factor model. The one thing that we have no idea about yet is what is this velocity, and that's the next thing in a model. So unfortunately, you don't get to see any graphs yet. First, before we look at what these AGF concentrations look like, I'm going to give a brief introduction into how to model interstitial fluid pressure and velocity. And this will be via this slide right here, which may also be disturbing just due to the volume of parameters that are associated with this model. So there's a good, there's 8 or 9 there, and keep in mind they're different between the tumor and the host tissue. And this is just for the pressure model, not including all the parameters that are in the AGF model as well. So long story short, we start from this continuity equation for steady state incompressible flow, and we abuse it by subbing in the simple Darcy's law relationship that says that velocity is proportional to the gradient of pressure, and this Starling's law, which tells us how much fluid is escaping some average vessel in the tumor bulk, which is proportional to the difference between vascular pressure and the pressure outside in the interstitial space. As far as keeping in mind some of these parameters, some important ones turn out to be hydraulic conductivity of the interstitium, so that's K. I'll remind you of that when we talk about K again. That basically tells you how easy is fluid moving through these tissues. And another one, LP, which is important in therapy as well, is determining how leaky that vessel wall is, essentially. And so I naively plug both of these into here, and I get the thing turning off. Oh, I hated that, eh? Ooh. Okay, and then I plug them both into here, and I get an equation for interstitial fluid pressure. I'll talk about how to solve that while I'll give a solution to it in a minute, but this is due to Baxter and Jane. There's a series of papers, and it was rigorously derived in a Nettie and Jane paper, this equation for pressure. And despite not looking similar at first, it's actually very similar to that factor equation if it didn't have, say, convection in it, because we have a diffusive-like term here, and we have some sort of constant production term, and then almost a degradation-like term. So solving them without convection would be very similar. So now we have an equation for factor concentrations, we have an equation for interstitial fluid pressure, and any irresponsible mathematician will non-dimensionalize them. And to get us started down that road, we'll isolate this non-dimensional parameter for interstitial fluid pressure. So all those tons of parameters, we can represent literally all of them into this non-dimensional parameter alpha, which determines the ratio of permeability of the wall to hydraulic conductivity in the interstitium. Okay, so, and once again, here's the boundary conditions. They're literally the same as the factor to ensure symmetry, continuity of concentration and flux, and a far field steady state. So here's the whole non-dimensionalized system. So this is what I'm solving. This is it right here, where the most important thing on this slide is that the factor concentration is normalized with its steady state. So as we move into the host tissue, these factor concentrations for antiangiogenic and proangiogenic in non-dimensional form are both approaching one. Okay, so that's going to be important. And we can solve this equation and this equation. So we have, instead of, say, coupled diffusion, coupled production, blah, 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 there ends up being 26 parameters. We now have a nice succinct group of non-dimensional parameters. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and actually two of them end up being the same. So we take those 20-something and reduce them to 7. This is useful for some sort of theoretical analysis of the model. It's not overly useful when I try and estimate the parameters because I can only really estimate the dimensional parameters. So it helps from a modeling standpoint, but not necessarily when I'm trying to estimate these. Now, I have pressure, I have factor concentrations, and now I'm going to throw a curveball at you, which is that actually what I want to look at is some sort of concept of angiogenic activity, which relates back to trying to figure out why do we see such high density of vasculature at the tumor rim, but we see some sort of huge concentration of factors in the middle, and it decreases as we move out. And this measure of angiogenic activity here is from a Stoll paper, where they looked at endothelial precursor cells, which I don't talk about here, but this is by no means unique choice. Probably the easiest choice would just be to look at the difference between the concentrations. But the key things you want in some sort of measure of angiogenic activity, or sometimes we call it angiogenic tendency, is we want it to be bigger than zero when angiogenesis is occurring or is being initiated. We want it to equal zero when nothing is happening, and we want it to be less than zero when some sort of when vessels are regressing, which will usually have to be initiated by some sort of anti-angiogenic therapy. But this is what we're looking for, and this is the functional form that we chose. And I'm not going to justify that because you just have to select a functional form to look at. And the typical scenario in a tumor is something we call focal suppression. So we have suppression of angiogenesis at the core, most likely because there's no vessels there, and we have strong stimulation where this angiogenic activity is bigger than zero at the tumor rim. And these other two, global suppression and angiogenesis, are possible. You don't see them often unless they're, say, induced by therapies or it's at the early stages of a tumor. So this is how we're going to kind of quantify what's going on with these factor concentrations. So I can solve for the interstitial fluid velocity. Looking at that functional form really doesn't help you much. The graph is on the next slide. Needless to say, these analytical solutions exist. They've been done by Jane. And if there was no convection, we could also, there's a very similar solution, analytical solution, for the growth factor concentrations. And that's been done before in this Ramanujan paper, where they looked at proangiogenic and antiangiogenic factors. But since I added convection, I've made my job a lot more difficult. I have to use a numerical integration scheme, which I won't talk about at all. Boils down to some sort of huge matrix inversion problem that I solve in MATLAB. And once I figure out the factor concentrations, I can talk about what sort of spatial angiogenic activity I've initiated. So here, the first thing we want to look at is how pressure and velocity change with this parameter alpha. So as you can see, once again, this zero corresponds to the middle of the core of the tumor. One is right at the tumor boundary, And then as we move out here, we're going to the house. And the pressure, when alpha increases, the pressure will drop at the core, and it will decrease as we move into the host tissue. And as alpha increases, it flattens in the tumor, and we get a really drastic drop at the tumor rim. And this is basically just the derivative of this graph over here, and this is the velocity profile, where we see really high velocity at the rim, and as alpha increases, we get even lower and lower transport in the middle, or in the core of the tumor, and really high transport at the rim. This is the key observation, I guess. So it's not straightforward where, as I increase alpha, velocity is increasing everywhere or decreasing everywhere. It's getting lower and lower in the core and getting higher and higher at the rim, which is interesting. So what happens when I add this fluid velocity to my growth factor concentration model? I get a big difference in angiogenic activity. So red is no convection, so just diffusion, and this would be probably some sort of analytical solution here. And the dotted line is the anti-angiogenic factor concentration, and the solid line is pro-angiogenic. And over here, this red angiogenic activity profile would correspond basically to some sort of difference in between those factors. So at the core, we have some suppression because anti-angiogenic is higher because it's not being cleared very fast. And then at the rim, pro-angiogenic is a little bit higher when we move into host tissue. And we would expect it to go to zero as we move out into the host tissue because we don't expect host tissue to be experiencing any crazy angiogenesis. When we add convection, something interesting happens. So instead of just diffusing, at the rim, all of these factors are being pushed out in the core and at the rim, but especially at the rim. So these concentrations flatten out and drive these concentration differences to be bigger at the rim. So we get a huge peak here. Does this actually correspond to some sort of increased angiogenesis? Probably not, but we at least expect that we would see some difference at the tumor rim. And now I'm going to do some hand-waving sensitivity analysis, looking at those three key non-dimensional parameters. So the first one, which the only one you've seen really so far, is this alpha parameter that determines what the pressure profile looks like. And remember that when you increase alpha, you get a lower velocity in the core, and you get a higher velocity at the tumor rim. So as I increase alpha, not much changes in the core from when I didn't have convection, but then at the rim, I see this huge difference again. And as I decrease this influence of pressure, I see pro-angiogenic growth factors being more influential in the tumor core. So when I increase alpha, essentially more factors are getting pushed out. And interestingly, it's suggesting that if I somehow therapeutically decreased alpha, which is generally considered to be a favorable thing to do, I might actually get more angiogenic activity in the core. That's interesting. A is a lie, that should be an omega. This is angiogenic activity. So this is some notation screw up, but yeah, this is omega. So when it's less than zero, it means something's being suppressed. When it's bigger than this dotted line, it means something's going on. And then as I move out, it's approaching zero. Okay, so it's kind of difficult to make sense of all those factor concentration graphs, so just look at the right panel if they're disturbing you. The second parameter we want to look at that's important is this convection parameter that determines the magnitude of this convective flux. So it doesn't really matter, but I'm equating this to increases in effective pressure. This is the exact result that we would expect. So as I increase this convection parameter, I get more convection of the parameters, so more are being pushed out into the host tissue. So this blue curve is higher than the other two, and it's driving those concentrations apart. So as I increase the effect of convection, I'm also increasing angiogenic activity at the rim, which is also will correspond therapeutically, because another therapeutic goal would be to decrease this convective term for other reasons, but it looks like it could be decreasing angiogenesis as well. And finally, the most complicated thing to look at would be some sort of combination of the last two bad things that happened when we increased angiogenesis, and that will be changing our hydraulic conductivity K. And this is kind of complicated because K, unfortunately, is present in both non-dimensional parameters, alpha and this other K. So unfortunately, they didn't separate distinctly into two nice groups. I have to be careful because now when I change K, I'm getting, say, an increase in one non-dimensional variable and a decrease in the other one. So we get basically a combination of these two effects, an increase in angiogenic activity at the core, which comes from changing alpha, and an increase at the tumor rim, which comes from increasing K. So this is kind of a more complicated behavior where we can definitely see at least a general trend where if I increase K, I'm increasing angiogenic activity. And for instance, in this blue curve, we get what's called global angiogenesis, so we get a really vascularized tumor. And I kind of alluded to a couple times how this corresponds nicely therapeutically. So various treatments we can consider to affect various parameters. And this is the most basic way to include a therapy. There's no time dependence. There's no schedule. I'm just looking at what would happen in steady state if I change these parameters. So a couple different therapies would change the production and the degradation, and I'll show a graph of that next. So these anti-angiogenic treatments, you could consider to be affecting those. But what I mostly want to focus on is this vessel normalization. Generally, we think of that as decreasing the vessel permeability, possibly decreasing the resistance due to more efficient structures, and also decreasing the surface area of vessels. All of these effects of the treatment correspond to these parameter changes, which aren't individually important, but they elicit these changes in the non-dimensional parameters. So we get alpha decreasing and K decreasing to improve chemotherapy delivery, for instance. But we just showed that decreasing alpha or K also could possibly decrease angiogenic activity as well. So that's kind of a nice unexpected consequence of vessel normalization, I suppose. The kind of confusing one would be something that alters the hydraulic conductivity. And in the literature, you know, it's admitted many times, we're really not quite sure if this is a positive thing or a negative thing, because increasing or decreasing the conductivity kind of makes more space in the tumor, you could think of. And from what we see here, increased hydraulic conductivity looks to be bad from an angiogenic standpoint, but there could be some pros involved. We're not sure. So I'm just going to show a graph of when I'm altering these degradation and production terms, because I didn't do that, and that's already been done, but just to relate it to therapy somehow. You could consider this to be the effect of, say, adding proangiogenic inhibitors, and this one to be, say, adding antiangiogenic agents. And just the observation I want you to make is that the angiogenic activity becomes negative, but you still, most of the time, see a little blip, at least, at the tumor rim. So it's not super easy to totally knock out the angiogenesis. So that's basically some results that we published last year for this talk, and now I'm just going to briefly talk about some extensions to this model that we could make. So obviously, whenever you develop a mathematical model, at least one of the goals is how it influences tumor growth, and then the next one would be how can we use this model to look at therapies or combinations of therapies. So I'm going to kind of hint at how we would do that. So taking pretty much the exact same model and just assuming it's not at steady state anymore and adding the easiest tumor growth we could consider, which is some sort of diffusion, which represents random motion of cells that may or may not happen, and then most importantly, some logistic growth term where the growth rate's dependent on some sort of stimulatory and inhibitory factor concentrations. And then have the production and degradation, the difference between those two parameters that were differed inside and outside, just turn it into some continuous, say linear function, some generalization. And so I did something similar to that. This is basically just the base case scenario, so some sort of control, where you're going to see the tumor radius and volume increase according to some experimental data we had, and then the tumor volume, and this should not say vessels. These are the growth factor concentrations, and this is the angiogenic activity as we go through time. So this isn't with any treatments. This is just a base case. And you see as this radius grows, the proangiogenic factors take over initially, but then eventually anti-angiogenic factors take over, and we have some sort of exponential growth through space, because there's no spatial constraint on this, I should say. That carrying capacity was more of a local density limiting. And this is the tumor volume that we would expect. I'll play it one more time for fun, because it's exciting, because it's moving. And this down here is the growth rate, which is basically just the, say, the stimulation from the system plus some constant. I could include treatments in this model, and I've done a more complicated model than the one that I presented before with some PDEs, and including straightforwardly the effect of chemotherapy, which would be negative against cells, some sort of proangiogenic inhibitor, and some direct application of anti-angiogenic factors, and run this through some PDE model and get some very cool pictures. Stuff that isn't easy to compare to experimental data, but qualitatively, when we look at this through time, we can kind of align certain things like density, the volume, maybe the density of blood vessels. This is a highly vascularized tumor, obviously, and some sort of angiogenic activity model. So these are pictures that I made probably 4 or 5 years ago. So the model's devolved significantly since then. But we're looking to apply the simpler model to treatment combinations. And just to wrap up here, this is just a video of what a tumor growth would look like through time in this heterogeneous model. Couldn't get through the talk without saying heterogeneous, where you see the tumor evolve non-symmetrically due to angiogenic activity at the rim. And finally, you can look at the effects of different treatments, how that looks spatially. So obviously from the last picture, applying anti-angiogenic treatments decreased the vascularization a lot and therefore decreased tumor density a lot. And then what we're most interested in is optimizing the scheduling and looking at combinations of chemo in anti-angio, and you see the combination of these effects in any model you want to use. So this was just an allusion to what I have done and what I want to do with this current model that I'm working on. So in conclusion, the things that I want you to remember basically from my first three quarters is that convective transport is definitely important, at least for the distribution of factors in the tumor and definitely in the host tissue as well, and that this view that, you know, diffusion and production and degradation are the most important parameters when it comes to their distribution likely we can affect angiogenesis by modifying physiological parameters like vessel permeability, like hydraulic conductivity and whatnot. And a nice consequence of what we looked at is that all of these goals that we already have of decreasing vascular pressure and vessel permeability to improve chemotherapy delivery also seem to, from the small at least, suggest that angiogenesis is being discouraged somehow indirectly. Hydraulic conductivity is still fuzzy. I'm not going to make a bold proclamation about it, but it looks like it could be causing, its increase could be leading to more angiogenesis. And finally, this AGF imbalance, if you can make a model for that, it's a very, very, very simple way of adding angiogenesis into your model. So the high perfusion at the rim without adding individual vessels and having a very, very complicated model. And hopefully the end goal is to test treatment combinations. We have tons of data for tumor results from combinations using this model. So thank you very much. And my primary collaborator is sitting right here, Mohammed. So thank you. Thank you. Say that again? Equations. Which ones do you want to see? Back, back, back? Okay. Like my non-dimensional system? Yeah, I can show you that. This guy? Yeah. At the tumor core?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I didn't enforce that the flux was zero, I certainly could. You could make the flux equal to some constant, I guess. Experimentally, you never see a spherical tumor anyways, so we may as well just assume that it's spherical and work off that. Does that answer what you're... Yeah. You could, so this is the great part and why, you know, breaking it down to here and using a spherical tumor, we can approximate some parameters better, for instance, and maybe have some sense of what's going on. And then sure, take this model, slap some time derivatives on it, and you have a PDE system that can certainly be a tumor could take any shape you want it to, basically, right? Yeah, fair enough. So yeah, I mean, there's not a single spherical tumor in the world, but every model builds off some sort of spherical assumption, and then we say, well, this never happened, so let's not do that anymore, right? Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't answer that reliably. Okay. Which one do you want to see? Some like a graph or a video? These guys? Okay, this is the easiest one to talk about. Yes. Yeah. Here?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've lined up exactly. Yeah.
You see that the dotted line is larger than antigen is larger than per antigen.
Here?
Yeah.
Here? Yeah.
This is actually similar to the Humboldt thing, right? Because
right.
Inside, a pro was bigger and then at the rim
yeah.
crossover. It's interesting that you only have
Yeah. So, I mean, we could probably, we could get rid of this by maybe changing. Yeah, yeah. But now, yeah, we see these intersect another time, right? And this is probably due to, it has something to do with the diffusion coefficient, but obviously, yeah, predominantly the high velocity here, right? Yeah, that isn't. Yeah, we get this guy right here. Yeah. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We get what we would kind of expect to get just from knowing some properties of pro and anti-integers.
Also, I wonder, I mean, general growth, we are not having geovascularization everywhere.
Right.
but I mean, I always thought, oh, we have sort of generic inhibitors always sticking around.
Yeah.
And that's maintaining homeostasis. But maybe there's like some subtle.
Yeah.
Sort of pruning and growing, mm-hmm. pruning and growing always to be the dynamic process.
Yeah.
In which case, maybe we should not assume that these things fail off zero or outside, that there should be some sort of dynamic.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we move that direction.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to make the geometry more complicated a bit and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, then we've already done it, right? But
if you go to two meetings, then interestingly, you have high androgenic activity inside the tumor core.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the admission is, these are results from, like I said, years and years ago. And the big problem with this model was we couldn't figure out, we don't want angiogenesis to happen everywhere, right? We really want it along the rim. And how do we get it to do that? Well, one option, have endothelial cells move up some gradient. Well, if they move up the gradient, they're going to end up in the middle of the tumor, which is no good. So we needed to add some sort of measure of how these factors are interacting. So that's up. That's definitely up for debate. But. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be interesting.
Do you know roughly, if you did a bank test of pressure, we say IST, it's heterogeneous.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything which shows what sort of variation you get? Because, when you put convection in, I was thinking, I guess, could you get convection within the tumor? Or is it order of the magnitude less than the pressure outside?
You get some crazy stuff other than just radially outward, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we had some sort of experimental spatial measurement of pressure, we could estimate the gradient and then estimate the direction of flow. So, yeah, certainly. In a small tumor, not really. But, I mean, if you want to look at something larger from a patient,